listening to the Creative Bowel Podcast. This podcast is aimed to help you get to your full creative potential. I'm particularly excited about the creative chat series we've been having for this season because I've gotten a lot of positive feedback of how people relate a lot with the different guests that I get to bring in. So thank you so much for the amazing feedback. If you still have feedback, you can share this podcast with your friends, share the episodes with your friends. You can as well send me an email, creativebowelpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send me a DM on Instagram. Our page is creativebulb_podcast. Thank you so much for the amazing feedback. I think I do this because of you. Today's guest is a very interesting one because 2020 has been a very funny year. A lot of us just woke up and we're like, okay, the world might end. So how about you just wake up and do some things? And I know one of the things that really a lot of people get to die because they don't get to tell their story. And we don't want to be those people who just don't end up sharing our stories and experiences. So today's guest is an author. She's a publisher. She does so many things. And we're just asking the question, why should we write? Because writing a book is one of those things that outlives a generation. So she'll be taking us through her process, how she was able to do it, how you can do it for yourself as well, and the kind of people you should be looking for when you're looking to write, and just give you motivation for you just to start writing your book. Because we want to be impactful to the generation that we are in. So ladies and gentlemen, without wasting any much time, let me welcome to the podcast, Joyce Gikunju.
So if someone was to ask you, who's Joyce?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Joyce is just a communications guru. First and foremost, ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to communicate clearly because I noticed that when you don't communicate clearly, the word doesn't get out clearly. There's a lot of broken telephone. And that used to upset me. And I always used to ask myself, what if we get it right from the beginning? What if I'm clear about what it is that I want? Then if it's a clear ask, then I will get a clear answer. So for me, I've always wanted to communicate clearly because I know the dangers of broken telephone. So that's what I've always been from the beginning. So I grew up knowing that I'm going to go to journalism school, and that's exactly what I did. I chose the university that I wanted to go to. I did my degree, my bachelor's at Daystar, and I did not just communications, but communications and PR, and that's where I learned all about what I'm doing today, and that's publishing, podcasting, stage confidence coaching, what else haven't I said? Even me, I do so many things. So, and also authorship. And I think the most amazing thing was authoring my own book. That was a defining journey, and it continues to define a lot moving forward.
Well, yeah. So I can just say you are a very focused child. You knew exactly what you wanted. You didn't even have any doubt whatsoever.
No, growing up, I was either going to be a lawyer or get into the communications world. Either way, you can see both require clear communication. And the better you are at communicating, the better you are at billing, the better you are at, being visible. So it was always something with regards to clear communication and addressing people. Yeah.
So is there something you did when you were younger? Because I know it's one thing to know what you wanted to do. So as a young person, before you even joined Daystar for communication, is there something you used to do before just to fire up your passion for communication?
Yeah, I grew up in the countryside. Actually, it's good you reminded me. I grew up in the countryside, and we used to live in those English manors that were left behind by the colonialists. And so you can imagine it's a house with a lawn. And, there's a lot of landscaping and gardening and all. And I actually used to walk around and I'm talking as if I'm being interviewed and there's a camera following me. And I'd go saying, this is this, this is that. This is, we've come to this section and this is what's happening here. And I'd just walk around and talk and imagine that I'm actually a reporter. Mm-hmm. And I used to have so much fun doing that because no one used to judge me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's really nice because now you, in a way, you knew what you wanted and then you went for what you want. Did you have when you were younger, is there any, at any point you were discouraged and in a way doubted what it is you were called on this earth to do? Did you have that identity crisis when you're like, oh, maybe I'm not a writer, before you joined Daystar?
No.
Awesome.
I grew up in a very encouraging family.
Wow.
I grew up in a very encouraging family, a very encouraging surrounding, even friends and relatives. It was encouraging. So yeah. The answer is no.
Yeah, awesome. So you've gone to Daystar. You finished your you did communications and public relations.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So after you're done with school now, what did you do? What's your journey to being an author like?
Right. So after I left, and I left at a time when it was not very clear what kind of jobs were available in the market, it was very clear from those who had gone ahead of us that you had to take what you get. And I'm talking the year 1997, a very unstable economy at the time. So I came out knowing that whatever it is I do, I'll just have to make use of my communication skills. Mm-hmm. And so I got into sales. That is what was, you know, really readily available at the time. Everybody wanted to promote their business. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to get ahead of the competition. So I noticed that my communication skills helped me get ahead in the world of sales. And I did that for a long time. And I enjoyed it. And people used to ask me, why, how come you're meeting your target? And I never quite thought about it until one day I realized it's all about how you communicate.
Yeah.
So communication can be applied anywhere.
Mm.
So that's the first thing I noticed. And then somewhere along the way, as you go up the corporate ladder, I think I forgot my dreams and my goals. I was just now focused on, you know, this is employment, this is adult life. You know, you do the work you get. But somewhere along the way, I started experiencing unfulfillment. And this is the point at which you start asking yourself, you know, when you were a little girl growing up, what did you want? What did you want to do? And this is when you start remembering your dreams. And then you ask yourself, is it realistic to start now shifting gears, changing horses? But this is what I did eventually. There was no other way. It was just difficult to enjoy work anymore. It was becoming work to go to work.
You know?
So that is when I decided, you know what, it doesn't matter what it will cost me. And yes, it cost me a lot. Shifting gears is hard, especially midway. But that's what I had to do to enjoy a life that I could actually recognize as my own. And that is how I ended up, you know, jumping, you know, changing horses. I ended up, you know, getting into what exactly I had studied for at the university. And it reminded me that this is something I had wanted since I was a child. So bad economy or no bad economy, I had to do what my heart needed. You know, I needed to settle my heart once and for all.
Yeah.
And so when I did that, imagine everything aligned.
There was
an alignment. Yes. One thing after the other, there was just such an alignment. Suddenly I was getting visibility. Suddenly I was getting sought after. So I realized, oh yeah, in life you have to go for what is yours.
Do you think the experience you had as an employee, did you think it really shaped the way you transitioned now to your own practice?
Let's just say that getting into the world of sales was good for me. It was a confirmation of a lot of things. Being employed for me was just a confirmation that I didn't want to be employed. I didn't want somebody controlling my time and stifling my creativity, telling me how to do things and not being creative about how things ought to be done. People just telling you how you're supposed to do something. And you know, it's Steve Jobs who says, you can't hire smart people and tell them what to do.
It's true.
And this is the tragedy that we have. And so I was tired of being in that tragic, you know, statistic. So being out here, I could breathe fresh air, I could use my creativity and actually make money. Yeah,
awesome. So so you already started now writing. So by the time you left, you started now, what did you start? As you start as a writer, what is it that you're doing? And is it because you had seen a prospect of making money, or it was just a hobby at the time?
Yeah, so imagine, no, it was not about making money. It's so interesting that when we are creatives, the first thing we think about is not about making money. It's making a difference. It's, you know, having an impact and leading a fulfilling life.
You know,
just being authentically you. So you don't think about it like that in the beginning. And it's so interesting that
as you do what you do, now you find people for who you can solve problems.
Yeah.
People come to you and ask you, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? And you say yes. And tomorrow you say yes. And another day you say yes. And before you know it, it's a fully fledged business.
Wow, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So you let's just say after you had left, so you started, you ventured now into your own business.
Yes.
So what business was it?
My own business.
Yeah.
Sorry, say that again.
What was the name of the business, and now like the process of how you now transitioned to now everything that you're doing right now?
So I started a business, the lifestyle company, in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the business that I began. And that's the business that actually, you know, birthed everything else. You know, you start something, you solve problems for people, and then something else is born out of it. Something else is born out of it. So basically what happened is that I first wrote a book. Writing the book first, meaning that I was able to position myself as an author. Mm-hmm. And even as I went into the world of authorship, I realized that a lot of people are writing books.
Mm.
Difference is many people have started, but few have finished.
Mm.
So every time you go for a networking event, people are telling you, oh, I'm writing a book, I'm writing a book, I'm writing a book. I realize there's a problem here.
Yeah.
People are starting, but they are not finishing. Mm. That means people need help. Yeah. So that is where it, you know, the idea of, can we help these people along finish their book? The ones who are committed. Because there'll always be people who are committed, there'll always be people who are not committed.
Yeah.
So for the people who are committed, I thought to myself, this is getting too much. Everybody's saying they're writing a book. 3 months later, 6 months later, you know, nothing. You know. And even when you follow up, now it becomes as if you're running after a prospect. And you're not. You just want to find out what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where the idea of ghostwriting was born. Can we help you, you know, shape your book? Can we help you write your book? If you don't have time, ghostwriting is the perfect one for you.
Mm.
But we like to think of ghostwriting as something, you know, more for people who are already in the expert space and people who are already in the accomplished, you know, space, or people who are retired, you know, like let's say your parents or your grandparents, they still have a good memory and they want to write their story, you know, a memoir.
Yeah.
So that is who takes up that ghostwriting a lot. But so should experts. Or people who just won't get the book finished and people are waiting for the book. Your tribe is there waiting for you. You might as well, you know, do the ghostwriting and finish it off.
Mm.
You know? So that is one of the solutions that we offer around the idea of writing. Because if somebody has been writing and they have not finished, chances are that they are not going to finish.
It's true.
Let me tell you.
They'll never.
So if you're writing, yeah, exactly. So why don't you get help if you're serious? Get it finished and get that book out into the world. And the thing about the first book is that once you get that book out, it unplugs and unstacks, you know, the books that are still stuck in your head. Because inside each one of, you know, inside each person lies a book yet to be written. Yeah.
Wow. Inside each person lies a book that is yet to be written. What? Is that, there's another quote I had seen. I don't know, was it a quote or I had someone mentioning. There are three things you should do that can leave a legacy. First of all, like have a child. Number two is plant a tree. And then number three is write a book, because books outlive you. But you've mentioned...
outlive you.
Yeah. But you've mentioned everyone, within each person, there's a book that they need to write. But honestly, most people don't consider themselves as writers. As a person, I don't consider myself a writer. I don't think I have a gift of writing. So I'd want to write a book, yes, but I don't know. So what do you have to say about some of these things? Do you think you've mentioned it, but do you think everyone really has a book? Do we all have to be writers, really?
So the thing about that is that it is true that inside each person lies a book yet to be written. But the question is, how do you offload that book from your mind? So there are very many ways you can upload that book. Some people will upload by writing poems. Some people will upload by writing a book. Some people will upload by recording.
Mm.
You know, I'm the kind of person you'll find sometimes with my phone using the recorder button, because an inspiration has come at a time when I don't have a pen and paper.
Mm.
So what do I do? How do I upload that notion in my mind? I actually record it. And that is like step one of ghostwriting, recording.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're struggling, you know, with you know, pen and paper, then you can record with an audio. And when you record with an audio, those audio files are the ones that are the first, actually the first step in a ghostwriting. In ghostwriting, we actually just carry a recording equipment and the person just talks. Mm. And you know that people love talking.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So the people who like writing, they'll use 100 words to tell you, I don't like writing.
Yes.
So then why can't they use the 100 words to tell us, the, you know, to upload a book in their mind? Mm-hmm. So this is what I have come to discover. Mm-hmm. And that is what, you know, that is why the best way to go about it is to just upload it from your mind by recording it. And then you get a hold of a ghostwriter to help you shape your story in a way that it can be made into a book.
Yeah. Awesome. So you've mentioned something about ghostwriters. I know in your world, it's an obvious thing, but where do people get these ghostwriters from? Because if you're telling people to record, that's okay. People can record. So yeah, now where do these ghostwriters, where do we find them?
So it's not just, so the idea behind a simple recording is that at least you've gotten started. But it doesn't mean that you've started writing the book. The idea behind recording is that at least you get started. The hardest thing, as with all things, is getting started. So at least when you start recording, now you even have the courage to Google ghostwriters in Kenya. And let me tell you, they're there, but they're so busy. They're busy. It's hard to get a ghostwriter who's just sitting there free. They're hard to get a hold of. Yes. But until you start, you know, walking the journey, recording that thought that is constantly in your mind, you won't find them. When you finally do get a hold of one who is probably free or in between projects, you can get the courage to keep recording because they can help you shape your story. Yeah, so they're there, they're in Kenya, they're just busy.
And you're one of them.
And I am one of them.
And so you have the lifestyle company. You have the lifestyle company to help people now do that.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. So, so now let's go back now to your journey. So you have the lifestyle company. At what point did you start podcasting? At what point did you start now your publishing house right now?
Right. So that's a good question. Lifestyle company is just a holding company. You know, it's like the company that holds the other ones. So the publishing house is called Bounce Back Books. Bounce Back Books is 7 years old. And that's the one that, you know, is the publishing house. Now, as the publishing house was taking shape, and you know that was like 7 years ago, somewhere along the way, you know, it was popular to blog. But for some reason, I just didn't catch on to the blogging thing. Mm-hmm. But 3 years ago, I thought to myself, hold on. So people keep telling me I have a good voice. And then my coach tells me, I think you should have a podcast. And you know, when your coach tells you to do something, you do it. Yeah. Because a coach is someone who's walked a step ahead of you. And so when he said, for me, I think your voice would be good for podcasting, I just jumped and ran with that. Just the same way I did with my book. When an idea came into my mind that I can write, I jumped on that idea. I don't waste time over analyzing things. Well, you know, if I'm told I can become a podcast, I start podcasting immediately. If the thought of writing a book comes into my mind, I start writing it immediately. This issue of writing and blogging and podcasting, these are not things that you overthink. These are things that you do. So you feel the fear and you just keep on doing it until, you know, it becomes a part of you.
Well, people usually feel the fear, but sometimes, I don't know how to say it, because as a creative, sometimes so many ideas come to your mind. And then you mentioned, most people, especially the people I've met that are gifted in writing, they probably have their own other jobs that are totally unrelated with any creative field. So you're asking this person, as soon as they get these ideas, to just jump on it. What would you advise someone like that? Because most people may not necessarily have the time to do it, or they don't know how exactly to do it. Like, how practical is it to be able to write? Everything else is just happening around you.
So the thing about that is that I have come to notice that even when I am busy being a mom and doing so many things at the same time, you find that when something is important to you, you create time for it. Sometimes you can be so tired and you're going to bed, and then you get into bed, you're tired, but the sleep is not coming. That means that is a golden hour. That is a golden hour to write one more paragraph, you know, to do a little bit more recording. So if you find that you're not catching sleep and you thought you're tired, why don't you engage your creative self? So what I've come to see is that when something is important, you create space for it.
It's important to create space
for it. It's all about,
And then also another thing I've also realized is a lot of these people, it's because they had, you had mentioned also in your story, there's a part where you had lost the passion, and then you had to come back and just find yourself and just get back to it. So a lot of these people, they may have had the dreams, they as children, they knew what exactly they wanted, but then life just happens and just you forget. So how would you talk to such a person to get in touch with their passions and not to start writing? Because right now it's not there. The fire is no longer there. Of course, if you have the fire, you can create time, but it's dead. So what will your advice be for such a person?
What I know normally happens in life, there's something that happens in your life. It can be an incident. It can be a scary incident. It can be something. And when it happens, you look at your life and you review it and you ask yourself, is this it? Is this how I want to go? What do I want people to think of me? What do I want my children to remember me for? And so when that tends to happen, people start living more intentionally. Mm-hmm. So usually people are jerked into a new reality by either, you know, a life-threatening disease. It can even be an accident. It's things that happen to people that jerk them into the new reality. Like, what kind of a legacy do I want to live for my children? What if I left today? What would my children say about me? That mommy just did the cleaning and the cooking. How do you want to be remembered by your children? So sometimes it's things that happen in life, you know, or you're just generally unhappy and you're thinking, is this my life? Who am I acting for? Who am I doing this for? You know, those are the kind of things that jerk people into a reality and they ask themselves, what do I want to be remembered for? I have half a complete book. You know, and for some people, they take care of their kids, yes, and then their kids become accomplished and leave the home. You have an empty nest. And then now the house is so quiet, you're like, oh my gosh, where was that book I wanted to write? So a lot of the people we write for, actually, we ghostwrite for, are empty nesters. The children are now out of the home, the house is quiet. You know, but they are lucky because they still have a good memory. Yeah, they took good care of themselves and maybe their genes favored them.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of people that, you know, tell us, I wrote a book 20 years ago. We asked them, where's the book? And they said, I can't find it. You know, so again, we start from scratch. So when something is, you know, when you place that seed in you that you want to write, sometimes it can take a really long time. But the best thing is, you know, you can motivate yourself or you give yourself a schedule. You can say, when I wake up in the morning, during my morning routine, if you have one, you can say, I'm going to write a paragraph a day. So that's another way of doing it. Yeah. Another way of, the easier, faster way of doing it is to schedule it in. When do you find yourself the most creative? Is it at 5 a.m. in the morning? Then write a paragraph a day. Before you know it, you have a book in your hand.
Yeah, awesome. I've noticed you've mentioned people come to you guys to help them write their book. That means if you're ghostwriters, we can't know the books you guys are working on. That's how it works.
Yes. Exactly.
That's how it works. So let me ask, do you go out? Because you mentioned everybody clearly has a story. There's no one who doesn't have a book within them. So do you guys also get people now? Do you identify people and tell them I can do this for you, or people mostly approach you guys to do the book for them? How does it really work, and how do you get these people with stories? Is that something you guys do, or just people have to come to you?
Most of the time it's people who come to us, because those who know ghostwriting well know that it's a premium service, and people who look for premium services know that they're not cheap. And so what they do is, it's almost like an interview. They say, I'm looking for a ghostwriter. And then, because they tend to be important people who take up the ghostwriting service, we find a lot, you know, and of course we know each other. When it comes to a client, a premium client looking for us, you find most of the time that we're like, you think that you're the only one who's going there to get the job, and then you find another 2, 3, 4, 5 people there waiting. So what tends to happen is that because they are important people, they interview all of you, and then we always say whoever gets the job, you know?
Yeah.
Whoever gets the job. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
So most of the time they look for us. We don't look for them.
Because I remember the first time I noticed you on LinkedIn, you had put out a post about publishing a book without writing one word. Would you talk about that project? Is that the service you're talking about, ghostwriting? What was that project about?
Yes. So what happened is we just thought of putting out an ad so that people can understand what ghostwriting is, because some people, and especially in this season we're in, this season we're in is just a tricky season. A lot of people, a lot of matriarchs and patriarchs are passing away, and they are leaving with their story. So we thought of putting out that ad so that if you know your parents are still there, they're still alive and well, they have a good memory, they have time, you know, because don't forget that a lot of these people are alone at this time because of social distancing. So we thought of putting out an ad so that if you know your parents are still there, this would be one way of appreciating them, by telling them to tell that story which they've told you so many times. But for you, if you drew a line across town, who never grew up the way you grew up, who can listen to your story and draw lessons and just improve their life. So autobiographies and biographies have a way of shifting the needle. You might think your parents' story is just kawaida, it's just an ordinary story, but it might not be an ordinary story for somebody else. So that was just an offer that we had put out so that people can actually think of speaking to their parents and telling them, why don't you write your story? How did you get where you are today? Where did all this wealth come from? How did you create it? So sort of leaving a blueprint behind. And people don't fight for books when you die. Yet that is where the secret lies, the secret of how you made it to where you are today.
Yeah.
So this is something parents would be honored to do.
So is the offer still on? Can guys still submit their stories or their proposals to you guys?
So yes, the offer is still on. We've decided to run it until the end of June.
Okay. And by the offer, you mean you guys are offering to do it half price, I don't know, or free, I don't know. What's the offer about now?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So ghostwriting is something we charge per hour. We just have a special rate per hour for the people who take up the offer until June 30th.
Oh, per hour, okay. Okay, now let me not get to understand. So I come to you with stories of my parents. You're charging per hour. How long does it take to have the book out? So what's, take me through the process so I get to you. The whole process.
So if you come to us, it is your parents who are going to be speaking, because remember, it's their story.
Yes.
So what happens is that when you come to us and your parents are ready, we have an expectations meeting where they, you know, first of all, they have to be accepting, they have to be agreeable to telling their story, because we also get people who don't want to tell their story. It's you who wants them to say the story, but they don't want to you know, tell their story. So what normally happens is that we get a lot of collaboration. A lot of times when it's a parent looking, it's the child who is involved in, well, not the child, but the, you know, the grown-up child who's involved in getting the ghostwriter. Again, for vetting reasons. Because this is, you're getting really close into the family. And don't forget that a lot of times the recording is done in the residence. It's not done in an office. Because like I said, most of the time these people are accomplished retirees. So the fact that you're going to get into their home and work from their home when you're doing the recording is what makes it a sensitive venture. And so when we meet the first time, we meet the people who are going to be interviewed, we set expectations, we set timelines. And then when everything is agreed upon on the first day, what happens is that we show up with recording equipment. Mm-hmm. And our recording equipment is very COVID compliant. It's like a 2-meter long cable.
Whoa.
So we come in, we sanitize, we sit down, you sit 2 meters away, and we attach you a lapel mic. And then there's a recording equipment halfway between the ghostwriter and the person being interviewed. And then we direct the questions in terms of, tell us about growing up, tell us about your childhood. So that goes on for the next like 10 to 12 sessions. That's like 12 hours. Most people's stories are done in 12 hours, by the way. And so that means that we schedule a weekly 1 hour meeting, and the person just talks and we ask questions and they answer the questions. So basically we are directing them and guiding them in which direction to go, just to make sure that in case of a memoir, we capture all the highlights. So that's the first phase. After that, we pick those audio files and take them to a transcription service. When they're put into the transcription service, now they're transcribed. Once they are transcribed, now you have like transcripts. So those are the transcripts now you hand back to the owners to look at and say, can you confirm that this is what you were saying? And then when that is confirmed now, that is when those transcripts are taken by a team of editors. And what happens is that is what we call manuscript development. So this is worked on until it takes a shape. Somebody else can take it also, look at it, listen to the transcripts. So people shape the story in teams, you know, just like the way you see some really nice movies that you like. Just think of a favorite movie or a series that you like. That movie or series was not written by one screenwriter. Every time you see a twist, it must be a change of writer. So every time you see a twist, it must be a change of screenwriter, just to keep it fresh. So that is what we work on for the next 6 to 9 months until it becomes a proofread manuscript, which can now be turned into a book. So from the manuscript, you now start taking it through the government process, through the legal process, through the design process, until it actually takes the shape of a book. And when it takes the shape of a book is when we take, we go to the printers and do a dummy, just a draft book. And we give you and we ask, is this how you want your book to look like? So you can also inspire the cover by saying, I want this to be on the cover. So when we bring you the dummy book, you can say yes or no. If it's a no, we go back until we come back with something that you're happy with. But usually we do that at the design stage, where instead of printing books, we show you various images and then we pick the one that you're happy with. When we pick that one which you're happy with is when now we go and get a draft book, and then we bring it to you and, you know, you say, are you happy with this? If yes, then now you give the approval. You sign to release that artwork, that book, now to become the real book.
Wow.
So once you approve that draft book, now that is taken back to the printers and it becomes like the blueprint, the one that will be used to print all other books. So from there, now you have a book in your hand. Your first carton of books arrives, and the other carton is on Amazon. Is an ebook and a print book.
That's a really nice process to do that. So roughly, let's just say it takes like a year or so, plus or minus, for someone to have a book.
And it looks simple, but it's quite a technical process.
Let me ask, is it something, because for me, it's new to me. I've always imagined those guys write, but I know they're usually writers behind, but I've never really gotten to research and know about it. Do you think it's something a lot of Kenyans, like when you put out the ad of the promotion or something, do you think it's something a lot of Kenyans are out to do? Did you get a lot of people willing to do that?
We got quite a number of serious inquiries. And usually the people who inquire, like I said, are people whose spouses have passed away, and they know that the spouse passed away with a lot of stories. We also got a lot of inquiries from people who have true life stories of rags to riches. We also got a lot of inquiries from people whose parents keep telling them stories and they keep repeating the same stories. Those are the kind of people for whom we get inquiries. And those are the kind of inquiries that convert.
Because for me, I feel it's a very important kind of project, because so many people die when they're very rich with stories and insights that a lot of us could learn from, because most of the time they just get insights from guys who are a bit famous, but there's the normal person in the village. There's just a kawaida person, your neighbor, who has an important story to tell that they are not telling.
The best way to get started is to put out a blog. You know, you write a blog, it becomes popular, people start looking forward to the blog one by one, and before you know it, your blog is something people look forward to each week. And then when you look at the feedback, the comments is when you realize, oh my goodness, I'm actually writing something that people are interested in consuming. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, the next thing you'll be writing a book.
Then you mentioned about having a blog. That means you're talking about it's important for writers to have a brand. But if you're to ask me, the pool around me that I know, if they're to write, they'd rather be ghostwriters. No one gets to know. People do not want to, as a writer, I don't want to be out there because nobody wants, not everybody is comfortable with them being out there. So do you think all writers should have a brand?
Of course, all writers should have a brand. Sometimes I get people who come to me with a manuscript and they want the book out. And then I ask them, what is your plan for marketing and branding yourself as an author? They say they want to remain in the background. And I always tell them I'm not aware of that kind of marketing where the author is in the background. Because what people don't know is that 90% of the work is not even in writing. It is in branding, positioning yourself as a brand in the market. So if you want to write a book and then you go back in the shadows, that's not how it works.
No. Oh. So branding is just one of the things you have to consider as number one. And you've mentioned, start with a blog, then go to something else. But then the biggest hassle I know right now, because blogging is not a foreign concept right now. A lot of people get to blog. I know most people will be asking, like, how do you get money? I get it, blog. How long does it take? Because nobody wants to have to do something that doesn't bring them money. At the end of the day, you're like, okay, you're writing, and then where's the money? So what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let me start with even something else you had mentioned earlier, that some people actually do this as a side hustle. I have a friend who is a banker, and he's also a writer. So he writes for the passion, he's banking because that is, you know, what takes care of the bread and butter, you know? So that is for somebody who is really concerned about making money with writing. Mm-hmm. But that is, you know, somebody who is in employment. Now let's talk about the person who wants to make money fully from writing. It means first and foremost, you need to be committed to this as a long-term journey. You know, the way you plant a seed and then you wait for the harvest later.
Yeah.
So if you want to make money from writing, it means you're committed for the long haul. Yeah. So of course, as you start, you need to have some income so that you can be able to publish the book.
Yeah.
Now, once you publish the book, you can actually make money from the book, but it's also good to have a side hustle, you know, as the brand is growing. As the brand is growing, have a side hustle. And then as you become more and more confident, as you become more and more popular, and you know, before you start making the serious money, at least you have something else supporting you on the side. Let me give you an example. With somebody in my book, Bouncing Back and Thriving, one of the titans in my book is actually, what's her name? This makeup lady, Susie Beauty. When Susie Beauty wanted to, you know, come up with her fashion brand, when she wanted to come up with her makeup brand, she realized that what she was getting into was, you know, something from the long haul. So when she came back into the country, she actually had to do jobs. She had to do what we can call side hustles, because she realized she has to bring in an income as she develops, you know, she plants that seed to come up with a makeup line. So this is what I always say. If you really are serious about something, you can focus. You can focus for the long haul, but at the same time, make your money on the side. And that is what she did. She actually did side gigs on the side until she made, you know, money every month, and until her products started taking off. When her products started taking off, they flew off the shelf. But you see, she had to make a sacrifice. She had a sacrifice, and what she did was that she had something on the side. And then remember when she, you know, when she decided to get into the main business, now when she saw that it's taking off, now it's when she threw all of herself into building that brand. That is a good strategy to have. You know, when you're not yet known, do something on the side. When your product takes off, just dive in and go all in. Just like what she did. And right now she's a very happy person. because she took the risk, but she also had to balance the income.
So you're saying in the when you choose to write, just choose to be there for the long haul, because the money might be there, but it's not something you get. You have to be very patient with it. So it means you just have to constantly be building your brand, learning about marketing and the likes. So you mentioned, exactly. So now let's go back now to you. You mentioned about, there's a book you mentioned, Bouncing Back and Thriving. And you had mentioned it's the first book you wrote before you now started warming up to the whole publishing space and writing space. So would you take me through now, why did you choose to write this book? And how did you go about the whole process until you had it published?
Yeah, so like I said before, usually some of these things come from the way life just happens, you know? So this book just came in at a time when there was just a lot of turbulence in my life. And this was the turbulence of trying to shift gears from corporate life to business life. And that turbulence was not a light turbulence. It was a heavier turbulence than I expected. And so when things were not taking the shape that I wanted them to take, one time I asked myself, you know what, I'm just tired of trying so many businesses at the same time and failing. And I don't understand how I can fail at this. And yet when I was in the corporate world, everything was so good. And so this is when now I thought to myself, there must be something I don't know that somebody out there knows. And that's why I'm not getting this right. The moment that came to my mind, I said, so why don't I go and ask the ones who know? And what is the African Titan story? And I realized that I couldn't find an African Titan story. Mm. Because when you pick books in the supermarket, you can hear what all the famous people in the US are doing, where they came from. But there was no African Titan story, you know? There's nobody who's written a book about how the Titans who are in this country or in this continent made it. I couldn't find a collection of their stories. And so I looked for them on LinkedIn and I found them and I told them, this is the project I'm doing. And they were more than happy to share their story. And that is how I ended up writing this book, out of my own need, but also cognizant of the fact that somebody else out there must have been struggling. Mm-hmm. And that is how this book came together. And then when I finished writing it, it became important to me to also let the Titans know that I had problems before. When I tried to, you know, get to do business with Titans, they were always so inaccessible. So I made it clear to them that the reason why I was writing this book is because I also wanted them to remain accessible to the people who are going to buy my book. Mm-hmm. Because I don't ever want to be in a situation where somebody is so surrounded by, you know, the personal assistant and so many other people who, you know, like are blocking the way to the person with the information, you know? So yeah. I said, this is something I had suffered when I was trying to do business, that every time you want to do business with someone, there are so many people in the way. And so when I finally got, you know, these interviews, because I looked for these people on LinkedIn, I found them directly. I told them that I needed them to remain accessible to the people who would read the book. And that is something that they promised me they would do, that they would remain open to answering more questions should the need arise. So this was, you know, created purely out of need. Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. So how long did it take for you to write? And then what was the response now in the market? Like, what did people, how did you do that?
Yeah, good question. Again, it took me 9 months, which is usually, you know, it's like the birthing process, the whole process. That is usually a typical, you know, the typical amount of time really a book takes. So it took me 9 months. And then the response was quite good. Anybody who bought this book before COVID must be happy that they have a script to look at for the COVID season. So the response was very good.
At what
point? Remember that for me, my marketing strategy was to be present and talk about the book and sell the book in person and do the book signing, you know, do the whole, just be at the forefront of the marketing game.
Which year is it that the book was out? Which year?
2019.
Well, I can just say you had a very, let me just commend you for the brilliant marketing, not brilliant, networking strategy you had. First of all, you approached them on LinkedIn, they accepted. And just to keep the connection going, you told them to be accessible to your writers or to your readers. Well, in the real sense, it was an excuse as well for you also to get to learn more from them. So that was a very commendable strategy. I don't know, did you know that's what you're doing, or you just wanted to learn? Is that something you had planned in your head? Like, so me, I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, it's so brilliant.
I think it's just the salesperson in me. That's just the salesperson in me. Because really, it's all about building relationships.
Yeah, nice. And it's also nice because they all agreed to be part of the book. So how can people find the Bouncing Back book? Where can people find it?
So if you, live in Kenya, you can find the book on nuria.co.ke. Nuria.co.ke is an online bookshop. You can also find the book on Amazon. If you want to read the book on Amazon, you can buy the ebook. But you can also buy the print book if you're not based in Kenya and you want to order the book as a paperback. You can do that on Amazon.
Well, nice. So that's your first book, Bouncing Back and Thriving. Did you get to write any other book, or so what happened from there? Because you also mentioned you are a speaker. So is that something you did after, or something you've been doing as you progress?
Yeah, so the speaking journey is what happens when you write a book. When you write a book, the first thing that happens is that you automatically also become a speaker, because if you are going to sell your book, you have to be a great public speaker. These two things go together. And that is why there is a quote by Brian Tracy that, you know, he says he noticed that all people who are great authors were also great public speakers. So out of me doing my talks and presentations about the book, now I started getting calls to come and do talks to motivate salespeople, because they know that my background is also in sales. So I would be called to motivate people who are not meeting their target. So yes, I do take paid engagements for speaking. I don't do anything for free, sorry.
Because
this is a business.
It's true.
And so this is the thing about, you know, growing the brand. So that's one of the things that I'm looked for, you know, when there's a sales team that's just not performing.
I can see what you had mentioned before, that everything just happened to align. So everything in your life is just aligning. It's aligning, and congratulations on that. So now let's get back to the whole marketing thing for writers, because yes, there are people who have books already. Actually, they've hustled, they've written, they have books. Now it gets now to getting it out to the market, and I don't know if this is true, but Kenyans don't really have a culture of reading. It also goes to show the culture of buying books is not there. Most of the people just buy books, especially when you're taking your kids to school, just the books you're asked by the teachers to buy. Then after that, they don't really get to read much. But what they do is they read blogs and everything. There's so many ways in which you can get your book out there. So what advice would you give to this person with a book and people are just not buying the book?
So for me, I keep hearing that in Kenya, there's no reading culture, but I am yet to come across those people who are not reading, because when COVID started, I joined 3 other book clubs. In total, they became 4. And those book clubs, when we're discussing on Saturday morning, Friday evening, the room is just packed full of people who are hungry for new information. What I have noticed is that there is a reading culture mostly among women. That's just what I've noticed based on the 3-4 book clubs that I'm in. They're 99% female attendance. So with regard to the person who's written a book and the book is just not selling, that's just somebody who needs a marketing strategy, which is one of the things that we do for our authors. You know, as the book is getting done by the technical team, you know, the publishing is, as a whole process I explained to you is going on, you can see the author, the aspiring author is hands-free, you know? They're hands-free because it's a technical process that does not require them. So what we do as a publishing house is that we work on their brand for those 6 to 9 months when the book is getting ready, and we help them position them, you know, to build an author empire. And so this is what we have come up with as our unique way of being out there, not just for the book, but also for the author, so that when you get out there, you position yourself for success.
Yeah, and that's actually the advantage that comes with having your book being published by a publishing house. And then there are a lot of people nowadays who instead of going to a publishing house, they'd opt for self-publishing. So is your first book, did you self-publish or did you get an author for that? And what's your take on self-publishing now?
And so, yeah, so what happened with the first book, I tried to go the self-publishing way, and I know the tears that you cry when you go the self-publishing way. When you go the self-publishing way, you cry tears, and you're like, why are you doing this alone, you know? And that is why for me, I decided to just strengthen that publishing house by saying, no, let's not just publish books for people. Let's really help them with the tough part, the 90%, the marketing part. Imagine for me, who is a marketer, and I can already tell you it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, for me, who is a salesperson, and I'm telling you it's tough. And that is why for us, for the last few years, it's not just publishing we're doing. We are giving them the full package based on my experience of, you know, how can I try to go the journey alone? Mm-hmm. So the fact that I went through that myself, it means then that I knew the gaps that other authors are experiencing, the frustration. So the 10% of the work that's being done technically does not involve the author. When the author is told the book is ready, the first thing that actually attacks many people is what is known as imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And that could be what is barring you from doing great sales. And so that is why I'm telling you, for the last 3-4 years, we've just not been working on the books. We've been working on positioning the author also for long running success. That mm-hmm. marketing angle is our unique selling space. Yeah,
exactly. And I can say that's the kind of support authors or writers need, because it's expensive even just to print the books, following up with the printers, getting it to marketing it. Sometimes you find you overquote or underquote. I don't know. It's another thing as a person you wouldn't really want to experience. But then sometimes also the self-publishing experience, it's also good to teach you what it is you need to outsource and just what you need help in. I get it. Well, so there's a lot you're learning from you about your speaking engagements, how you got to publish your first book, how you're helping different authors to get to publish their book, and the whole ghostwriting thing. So it's a project that I think people need to consider for people who have real stories to tell. So as an author now, as a person, are there any other books you've written or other projects you're working on as a writer?
As a writer, usually what I do, it's my secret weapon. Mm. I don't talk about a book before it's published. So
what
I do is, I'm the kind of person, you find me on TV one morning and I'm talking about a book that nobody knew I was writing. Because I discovered that one of the reasons why books don't come out is because you're spending all your energy talking about the book instead of working on the book.
Oh, so that's something... So you're the only person who knows you're working on the book?
Exactly.
And that's a nice strategy.
And I make it clear to them that they are meant to discuss the book.
Well, okay. Then, that's nice. Because sometimes you tell people, you promise people, and then you end up not finishing the project. So by the time now the book is out, that's when now you start marketing it and telling people, now I have a book.
Exactly. What I do is that if I know I'm doing a TV show a week to the launch, I just take advance. I just do the TV show first, and then I share the clip. When I share the clip of the TV show, I say I am taking advance. I'm taking orders for advance copies. That is the way the journey begins. Yeah.
I think it's a really nice. I think it's a really nice idea because there's another. I was listening to another. Was it a podcast or something on YouTube? Sometimes as creators, we need to learn to create in silence. And it's something with social media right now, we are pressured to talk about, you know, you want to feel like you're doing something. Everybody's out here launching things, launching companies. You want to feel like you're also doing something. Being able to create in silence, and it's the hardest thing. Did you struggle with that, or you're just not that kind of a person? Because it's so hard to create in silence. You want to feel like you're doing something. People should know.
You see, I did an analysis of myself and the projects of mine that had failed in the past. And when I think about those projects and the way they had failed, I had discussed the length and breadth of those projects, and they still failed. So I asked myself, are you open to the idea of working in silence and seeing whether this will actually, you know, will something fresh and new will be birthed by creating in silence? And that's exactly, you know, is what I did. I was trying out something new, something I had never done before. I was trying to do something I've never done before, which was to create in silence and work in silence. So it was like a test, and the test was successful. So from now on, if I want to create something, I create in silence.
You keep quiet. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Wow. So, and you've seen results ever since, because I've also, for me, there are also projects I've talked about that I've never really got to do. Because sometimes you imagine by telling people about it, you'll be pressured to do it, of which sometimes it works because people can hold you accountable. But that means sometimes you end up just not doing it, or people can pray you down. Okay, that's an imagination. Or people can just, like, I don't know, can stop you from doing it. Makes a lot of sense. As an author, aside from the part of creating, what are some of, as a creative now, because you see you're a creative person, what are some of the things you have really, really struggled with? And how have you been able to deal with it, to deal with the things you've been struggling with?
I can't say I've had a writer's block. In terms of challenges, I can say that when COVID began, the book sales went down. That is what I can say was a challenge. And so we had to think quickly on our feet in terms of where else can we put our books so that they can sell, because this was a new season for everybody. So that is now when we decided that we can actually put the print books on Amazon.
Makes a lot of sense.
So that's how we dealt with that. Yeah.
You mentioned you've never had a writer's block. You're serious?
You know, for me, why I say that is because I'm not the kind of person who schedules to write. I'm the kind of person who writes by inspiration. So writing by inspiration means that when an inspiration comes and you're driving, you put the car on the side of the road and you record what it is that was the inspiration, then you go and write it later. So I work by inspiration, not by scheduling. The people who write by scheduling are the ones who can say they have writer's block.
Writer's block. Oh, amazing. Okay, awesome. Yeah. So in terms
because you're sitting down to, because you're sitting down to write at a certain day, at a certain time when you usually feel inspired, but on that particular day, there's nothing coming out, you know, so that is why it's called writer's block. But if you work by inspiration, you just wait for the next inspiration.
But inspiration is one of the most unpredictable things. But I think it works for you because you've not promised anybody anything. So nobody knows what you're working on. So you don't have
And plus, don't forget.
Yeah.
Yes. And plus, don't forget, like I said, it's so unpredictable. Sometimes you're driving and then the inspiration comes, and that's why I say, because it's that unpredictable, you have to find a way to park the car and do what you need to do, and then you keep driving. So that is why, because of that unpredictability, you just have to wait for that download, and then you record it before you forget. So yes, it's unpredictable. And like you said, I haven't promised anybody anything, so yeah.
nobody gets to know. But then as a person, okay, I know you've not promised anybody anything, but you know, as a person, you have these books you have to write. So we don't know, but as a person, you know, you have pressure within, you know, there's a book you have to write. So is there a way you've been able to, because you can't predict when you get inspired. Sometimes you have to put yourselves in spaces to be inspired, because sometimes when you wait for it, it never really happens when you see it. So is that something you've been able to control, like how often you get inspiration? Because you know, you have like 7 books right now you know you're working on. How do you ensure inspiration comes when you need it?
There's no way of, to answer that, it's all about the environment. If, for example, I want to be inspired, there are certain places I can go to, quiet places. I can take a walk in Karura Forest. I can go and I can go to a golf course on a day when there's very little going on. I can go to the Arboretum on a quiet morning. That those are the kind of spaces that will actually download a lot of inspiration. Those are the spaces that, you know, that trigger inspiration because they are very quiet and the open room for reflection.
In terms of accountability, do you, okay, you had mentioned somewhere, but I didn't even ask, you have like a coach or a mentor. Because you're the person who creates in silence, nobody knows. Do you have somebody? Because sometimes as a creative, because people don't know, you might end up not doing it either way. So nobody knows, so you don't do it. Do you have people or something that keeps you accountable to ensure you're able to do what you had promised yourself to do?
Yes, I always have the services of my coach. He actually checks in every so often to see how I'm doing. So that's how I keep myself accountable. And the reason why it's so important to have an accountability partner is because you must get moving, you must get things done. So it's so important to have not just one, not just two, but many coaches, but and different types who inspire you different ways.
What's the one thing now you'd want to advise someone who's listening? Someone who is probably a creative, someone like you, who is doing, like for you, when you're feeling lost at that season, I know you're looking to now get into your own thing and just to feel creative and to feel like you are making a meaning on this earth. And you're very uncertain. Not everybody's life really gets to align. It's not, the alignment is not usually obvious. So you're going to this uncertain world of, you don't know what you're doing, but you're like, okay, should I do it or not? What advice will you have for such a person who's now in that space?
Yeah, so the most important thing I tell that person is that if you want to change your life for the better, start surrounding yourself with the kind of books that your mentor is reading. And more importantly, surround yourself with the people who have already reached where you're going. Two things, the books and the mentors.
Awesome. So how can we get you? How can you get to find your work? What's your website and everything else?
Okay, so my website is bouncebackpod.co.ke. My Facebook is Joyce Gikunju. My Instagram is Gikunju Joyce.
Awesome. And you also mentioned the places where we can get to find your book and your work. And if anybody needs any of this ghostwriting services, they can be able to contact you even on LinkedIn because you reply. So thank you so much, Joyce, for doing this interview. I'm so happy. I also asked you on LinkedIn just like that, and you accepted. So yeah, it's good to be out there to mentor people who want to write. So totally unrelated, is there anything you may not have mentioned that you want people to know? Anything random?
Yeah, in life, I think it's important to stay hungry. You never think of yourself or I have arrived, you know? I think the secret in life is to stay hungry. That way, you'll always be open to learning new things.
Yeah. Stay hungry, you'll always be open to learn new things.